San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB, presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. You can get us on the app for 760 KFMB. You can get the podcast at iymoney.com after the show. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a best-selling author, and he is a family office expert to advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous, Joe. I made it back to town alive.
Tell us about your little excursion.
Well, let's see. It started a week ago Thursday when I went to opening day at Del Mar Racetrack and then hit Seersucker Del Mar for the after party. Rev Run was playing with the co-founder of Run DMC.
How many broken high heels did you see?
Oh, I can't keep count. And then made the mistake of driving all the way to San Francisco the next day.
Oh, my gosh. With how many? Your daughter and who else?
Demi's going to be a freshman at San Jose State. So Tuesday and Wednesday of this week was Parents' Day, so we wanted to have some fun before doing that. So we went up to Paso Robles and then San Francisco before, and then San Jose for 2 days, coming back down, and then Monterey and Carmel coming back down even further, and got back late yesterday.
So it was five people in the SUV.
It was a load of people, two dogs.
Oh my God!
It was a true road trip. It was a lot of fun.
Now you didn't put the dogs on the roof like.
No, I didn't tie the dogs to the roof. Okay. Like who was that? Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
No, I didn't do that.
Okay.
So made it back in time late last night to run a 5K for the Navy SEALs down at Liberty Station this morning, where I got the gold medal in my age group.
Oh my gosh!
And I didn't even think I was going to be able to walk. I was so tight from driving for 10 hours yesterday.
Huh.
But fun stuff.
Wow, that's great. And let's see, what else? Well, we had a great show last week. Dickie Smothers.
And yes, I was able to hear it on the radio in San Francisco, only for 3 minutes because I was on my way to dinner.
Right.
But it did carry all the way to the Fairmont Heritage Plaza
Ghirardelli
Square.
I do say up the coast of Seattle, so apparently
Seattle's north of San Francisco, so it was on its way.
Good reception, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Dave Sniff will be glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, the hard part was finding a radio. Everybody in the hotel looked at me real funny. They're like, what's that?
Right, because everyone, you know, most people would listen to an app on their smartphone or whatever, like some people do. There's also a tune-in radio app, which is kind of cool. You can get almost any radio station you like. So, but let's see, our aviators won our Western Division. Can you fill us in on what happened?
Yeah, the San Diego Aviators, the WTT tennis team, won the Western Division, but then lost in the semifinals in the playoffs to the Springfield Aces, but still a good season.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Billie Jean King is in town this week for the WTT Junior Finals over at Barnes Center this week.
Junior National Tournament. Yeah. And actually, it's open to the public. If you want to come down and meet Billie Jean King, just call the Barnes Tennis Center. I think it's still 619-221-9000, but
Something like that. But right there as you're entering, at the end of the freeway there before you sort of hit Point Loma,
right.
Ocean Beach.
And of course, we had a great interview with her last year. And of course, we were instrumental in getting that film made that ultimately appeared on PBS last September. So we deserve pats on the back for that.
But that's a neat event. So.
Yes. And let's see. Padres, since the All-Star break, 5-2.
Yeah, trade Chase Headley in Houston Street.
Hey, you know what? They're hitting, so pay attention. They always have an interesting second half, so we'll see. They'll probably wind up, three games out or whatever.
No.
You don't think?
I'm not optimistic.
Okay, well, we'll see. Their pitching's been good.
Pitching's been great.
So all they have to do is hit, so I think they're working. Hey, we've got an important guest here tonight, though. We really should get into the show.
Oh, okay.
And but we have one guest for the whole show, but he's a very important guy in urban development in San Diego, and he's got an illustrious career. He's a Renaissance man. He's an expert in furniture restoration and creation, and he's an artist, you could say, in the field of woodworking and furniture. And his name is W. Patrick Edwards, but he likes to be called Patrick. So, Patrick, how are you tonight?
Thank you both. I'm fine.
That is great. Well, you've had an illustrious career. Tell us a little bit about your education, because I know you went to UCSD, another UCSD graduate here on our show.
UCSD.
Yeah, it's got to be USD or UCSD to get on this show.
Yeah, we just had the chancellor on in June, and Irwin Jacobs, all kinds of UCSD grads have been.
I grew up in San Diego, so UCSD was a great choice.
Mm-hmm.
I when I went in there in 67, it was one of the first freshman class. And I thought math and physics all the way. But Saltman changed my mind and told us we had to learn philosophy, humanities, history, opera, religion, social studies, social science, and politics.
And these are the days when there's a lot of activism on campus.
There was a lot of activism
because of
campus.
The Vietnam War and racial problems.
I got very involved in the 60s.
Yeah.
That's cool, though. My daughter Demi's going to be taking Humanities Honors Program at San Jose State.
Yeah. So your hair was a little longer then, huh, Patrick?
It was long enough to make my dad upset. That was the point.
So how many students were back there in 67?
It was small. I think 1,700.
Oh, my goodness.
In the whole school?
Yeah, it was Revell. The whole school was Revell. Yeah.
Oh,
it was
my Revell. Gosh. Well, he's the guy who started it.
And Harold Urey was walking around. Stanley Miller was walking around. Saltman, like I said.
You took a class from Angela Davis, right?
Angela Davis, Marcuse. I had some serious professors.
Well, if you got over to the engineering side of things, Dr. Irwin Jacobs was over there, too.
It was a cesspool of intelligence.
So math and physics were your major. Your minor was American history.
Yes, sir.
And then you had great accomplishments in physics. Then you decided to go to Europe, and that was a transformational point in your life, right?
Well,
so
I actually
describe what happened
in high school at Crawford in San Diego. I built a linear electronic accelerator for my science fair project and took first place at the science fair in 67. And that entitled me to go to the National Science Fair, but I decided not to go and instead got on a bicycle and rode around Europe for 3 months, which was the best choice of my life.
And how old were you then?
18.
18, wow. By yourself, you decided to go over to, where did you start and where did you?
I started in Amsterdam and ended up in Brussels, but in between I went through seven countries.
All on a bicycle?
Yes, sir.
By yourself?
Up and down mountains in Switzerland,
staying
in hostels. Literally, at that time, it was not only the summer of love, because it was 67, but you could travel on $2 or $3 a day.
Huh.
Literally.
So that whole trip probably cost you, what, $500 or something?
Well, the bike was $134. The airfare was a propeller plane. which took forever, and the hostels were maybe $1 or $2 a night, but you had to make the beds and sometimes do the dishes.
Oh my gosh.
And the hostels are always at the highest point in the city, so you had to get there after riding 150 miles over cobblestones and then climb some mountain to get to your bed.
Oh my gosh. And so you did this, how many weeks was this now you did this?
3 months.
3 months. Yeah. Oh my gosh. You probably did the whole 3 months for like $500 or something, right? You
think? I don't remember. It was a blur.
That is amazing. So what happened to you on that trip? You obviously...
Well, I got exposed as a Southern California native to the culture of Europe. Mm. Castles, museums, European women, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I grew up very fast.
Huh. And, well, obviously you had an affinity for what the woodworking and the artistry that you saw around there. And then you said that one, what?
Not at that time. I was still math and physics. In 68, I worked at Brookhaven as a student at UCSD. I got special dispensation to go to Brookhaven and work for a year on the accelerator. I was very much into physics.
Mm.
This was a time when you could walk into General Atomic as a kid and say, you know, I'd like to build something, and they would just give you the equipment.
Mm.
Nobody had a security question. It was, you know, a bright young kid, here, take this diffusion pump and go build an accelerator.
Huh.
So, it wasn't until 69 when I got married and needed an income that I opened my business with antiques as a sideline.
Mm.
But I still worked in the physics department throughout my career in college and after that.
And then when did you make the entire leap into...
In 73, I was given the ultimatum by Maxwell Industries that I had to decide between my outside career and my inside career. I was a paid salary engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I was making $10,000 a year, and they thought that was enough to keep me happy, and I wasn't happy. I was making $2,000 or $3,000 on the weekends with my antique business. So the money alone made me decide to abandon my career and go into this other field.
There you go. So
no regrets about that, right?
No, sir. Especially because the antique business is basically a cash business. There's some advantages you guys might know about.
Yeah,
that.
And then you said there was a big boom in the antique industry.
I was lucky at the time because of the bicentennial, right? This starting with Jackie Kennedy in the 60s all the way through the centennial. The bicentennial, there was a big interest in American history and antiques and decorative arts all the way through the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And that continued as long as there was a real estate boom, and everything came to an end in 2008, pretty much.
Yeah. But the bicentennial was a big, those were big years for you, right?
You could buy and sell as fast as you could get it.
Yeah, American history and all that. So your background in American history, it did kind of figure into all of this, right, with the
firm? Well, what I did with it was I would get in a truck with $1,000 cash and drive back to the East Coast and buy antiques and visit historic sites and museums and then drive home and fix up the antiques and sell them. And I did that almost monthly.
Oh, my gosh.
So I got very familiar with the American East Coast, which lasted for several years.
You drove across the country once a month for...
Pretty much, yeah. I feel like I should
Richard,
have been...
Richard, you have no complaints.
Yeah, I should have been 500 miles, big deal.
Could have been a long-haul trucker with a physics degree.
Wow. Well, let's digest that and take our break right now. We'll come right back with more Rich Your Money and Your Life and our guest, Patrick Edwards, and we'll talk about the reemergence of North Park, too. So hang on. We are back with It's Your Money and Your Life with our guest, Patrick Edwards, businessman from North Park, helped resurrect that neighborhood. But I'm going to get more into his development of his career because he's really an artist, extraordinary artist when it comes to woodworking and furniture. So where'd we leave off, Patrick? I wanted to get to the point because I know you're highly credentialed and were schooled over in Europe. Maybe you could tell us how you got back to Europe and really got heavy duty into the furniture creation.
Well, in my early days, I realized that there was a lot of competition in restoring antiques, but very few people specialized in veneered furniture and especially marquetry furniture because it was a challenge and difficult. So I started focusing on that, and eventually I ended up in Paris being invited to attend a school there called École Boulle and study with Dr. Pierre Ramon. And I spent 4 years in that school.
And it's highly selective, right, to get in there. There's only they only accept six people
Pierre has had seven outside persons in his career. He's retired now. I'm the only one he invited back. And I developed a close relationship with him and the school and subsequently became accredited to receive their students in my workshop.
Hmm. But they only accept a small handful of people, right?
It's not like that. It's a rather closed college. Mm. You have to be French to get in.
Hmm.
But the professor has the choice of inviting in a person for a stage, as if you were an intern in a hospital. A physician could ask you to come in and do something as a stagiaire.
Mm. Gotcha.
Now, you were one of the artists at work at the Getty Museum, right?
For 3 years, I spent time at the Getty interpreting French marquetry. I've done several videos and television shows about that, and
okay.
I've focused on 18th century.
I've seen that program a little bit, so people actually watched you work, right?
I spent 2 hours twice a week for 3 years demonstrating marquetry with antique tools and lecturing about how it's made.
Okay. Did you enjoy that?
Except for the drive, I enjoyed it very much, yeah. Yeah.
Well, now, you even had a TV show on KFMB back in the day.
Yeah, I started in 73 at downtown Channel 8. And
when the studio was on Ash or something?
Yep, and we did 10 shows called Welcome to the Past, The History of American Furniture.
Hmm. And was it just yourself and Gail?
It was just me.
Really?
Yeah, I did two shows a week. I had to, of course, it's a set, and I had to provide the set.
Mm-hmm.
So
you had to make your set. That makes
sense. Yeah, I made my set.
I made the set.
I had to do that.
Do the show.
But as you know, I had no help, so we had a B-roll,
mm-hmm.
which allowed me to be off camera because it was live, 28 minutes, 30 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
During the B-roll, you could hear me grunting and groaning as I was moving furniture around to change the set while I'm talking over the B-roll. So it was physical.
It was live, just yeah. like right now.
Yeah.
But boy, that's terrific. So anyway, and then but your title, you told me earlier, you're an ebonist.
Ebonist is a person working with veneer in a European sense, a mm-hmm. cabinet maker.
And some of your work takes like upwards of a year to make a table, right?
Typically, I'll build a piece of furniture that takes 600 to 800 hours or
wow.
more. Perhaps 1,000 hours.
Well, I've seen a couple of them at our friend's house where we had the berry dinner, Richard, and I want to tell you they're extraordinary.
Yeah, there's some amazing furniture. That.
Those two tables took 2,000 hours out of my life.
Those big ones? Okay. Wow.
But you were compensated, right? So
the money's gone. It passed through me. I feel like an offshore bank.
Now you've had, and we can't name names, but you were telling us during the break some of the clients you had, some of the biggest people in Hollywood, et cetera, et cetera. Well, so your reputation obviously is extraordinary.
I grew up in San Diego, but I was born in L.A. Mm-hmm. and we lived there until 1958. But the proximity to L.A., Beverly Hills, Bel Air. Those areas provide me with business, and I can run my truck up there and mm-hmm. do quite well.
Now, we may as well, your business is called Antique Refinishers. You're in North Park on Utah.
Yes,
and is there a website that we can give? Or,
My blog is the central point of my life. It's wpatrickedwards.blogspot. And from that blog, you can get my philosophy, my work, and my businesses all linked to that.
Wonderful. So they just Google Patrick Edwards, they're going to find you, right?
W. Patrick Edwards. Patrick Edwards is a football player, and he takes most of the Google time.
Okay. Well, all right. W. Patrick Edwards. Google that, and there you have it. So,
there's an amazing Greek Revival house near Los Angeles called the Banning Residence Museum. Is it true you were the furniture conservator there?
I worked there 9 years. I had the cupola as my office.
Did you really?
That is
a cool place.
I've physically built the rooms with the furniture provided to me, and I enjoyed that very much.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't been there, you really should see this place.
You should go to Wilmington and go to the Phineas Banning Museum, Residence Museum. It's wonderful.
It's the Wilmington right near Los Angeles, North Carolina version.
It's down by San Pedro.
Right, by San Pedro.
So what's the name of the house again?
I think it's Phineas Banning
Residence Museum.
Residence Museum, yeah.
Wow. In Wilmington.
Yeah. And
it was built in the 1860s.
Near San Pedro, we're talking?
That's right. Yeah. He could see... Phineas Banning was a very important figure who actually made his money from the 1850s on, bringing cargo from the harbor inland and mm-hmm. then built a railroad spur to downtown and eventually enticed the national railroad system to come to L.A. Without Phineas, L.A. would be Pueblos today.
But this thing is Greek Revival, Joe, to me, because you don't really see this stuff on the West Coast.
I wonder if there must be something online about it, right? There must be.
You'll
have to Google that. Maybe you should put a link on your blog.
That's old history. I did that back in the 70s.
Well, I know, but history never gets old. Hey, how about that for a T-shirt? That's a good T-shirt. Maybe we could etch something with that into one of your...
I wish more people were interested in history myself.
Well, I guess there are certain groups that are. I don't know
We love it here on this show. Absolutely.
Well, gosh, we just had Dickie Smothers on there, some history for you.
Yeah.
And we're working on, I meant, we're going to work on Pete Rose and Phil
He had
Donahue.
No problem dropping names, Patrick. So
we're working on Pete Rose and Phil Donahue, so we'll see what happens.
So, Patrick,
that.
I was reading your philosophy, this thing called the workmanship of risk. We talk about risk a lot on this show versus the workmanship of certainty. Can you talk about that before we hit our break here in a few minutes?
As you already know, I spent a lot of time in technology, so mm-hmm. it was very difficult for me to consciously negate the effects of the Industrial Revolution and technology in my workspace, which is only hand tools. I struggled for a long time to develop a philosophy that would exist before the Industrial Revolution. And that philosophy has been discussed in my fields going back to the 60s. And it's defined by the workmanship of risk or the workmanship of certainty. In risk, you take the tool and you work it against the material and you take the risk. In certainty, you push the material against the tool and you produce a certain result.
Mm.
And so in the previous one, risk, you become the master of the tool. In the second one, uncertainty, the tool becomes the master, and you just feed the tool. And there's a lot to discuss about that particular position.
Well, that's where the artistry comes in, right?
Take a risk.
Yes, there you go. So,
and master your tool.
There you go. How about that, Richard?
That's a neat concept.
Yeah.
That's how I live my life.
Now, you are one of the few, I guess the only person in North America that has the skill set of what we were talking about. Explain that a little bit.
Well, what I've done is I've taken the technology, what I call a pre-industrial espionage, from the 18th century, the tool called the Chevalet de Marquetry that was used in France, in Paris specifically, to cut the marquetry elements unique to France and quite different from every other country. And I imported that tool and that technology to America and created a school, the American School of French Marquetry, where I teach people about the tool and how to use it. And with that tool, you can cut very precise elements of wood that fit together remarkably well.
Hmm. And you're still teaching
we have classes on a regular basis.
Really?
At my location.
Really? Yeah. So how many weekly?
Six or eight students.
Once a week? Or?
We have two-week classes quarterly.
Hmm. And you probably have a wait list to get out, but a lot of people are interested, huh?
It's a niche market.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't want to take that risk, you know, to when they make a piece of furniture, and you know, they might.
It's difficult to promote something where you begin by explaining what it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you do have a lot of work on display, so people, if you want to just see some beautiful furniture, they should come. They can stop by, right?
Well, my business is always open. I'm there every day.
Yeah, that's great. So, well, folks, we have in San Diego the only fellow in North America that has this niche skill with this Chevalet. So that's pretty substantial. That's great. So, anyway, we're coming up on our break right now, Richard. Let's go to news, sports, weather, and we'll be back with Patrick Edwards. We're going to talk about North Park right after this. So hang on. Today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help. All right, we are back with the second of Vitrum in Your Life, and over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you to our sponsors. Couldn't do it without all of them. UBS, Mr. Michael Caronter and Drew Freitas. On Prospect Street in downtown La Jolla, right across the street of Prospect in La Jolla, Regions Bank, the best business bank in San Diego, with Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton. Brenda Geiger, the law offices of Brenda Geiger, asset protection and estate planning. Brenda's got a great new book out called The Secrets of Great Estate Planning. It's a must read.
And we'll have her on shortly.
She was actually supposed to be on this tonight, but, you know, her husband decided to have a bunch of relatives come into town and didn't tell her.
Family emergency.
Oh, well. So. These things
we'll get around in a few
happen
weeks.
In the summertime. Mm-hmm. Got to spend time with family. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, the best CFO service here in town. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Paul Polito and Don Epic, Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. And Joel's partner, Kurt Cottreau, is going to be in from Baton Rouge, Louisiana this week. We're having breakfast, I think, Wednesday morning. So helping real estate owners improve their cash flow by identifying a bunch of really cool things in their construction and in their acquisition that they can depreciate a lot faster than 39 years. And speaking of risk, Mr. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners understand the risks that drive the values of their businesses and helping business owners improve those values. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group. So thank you very, very much to all of our sponsors. Couldn't do it without you folks.
How about the Lombardi Group?
They were only a sponsor up to our seminar, but the Lombardi Group is still a very good friend of ours.
Okay.
And in fact, that was the group that was out running the race with me this morning.
Terrific.
Our assistant, Angelica, her boyfriend is in the SEALs, and he's being deployed right now.
Wow.
So his mom was out, and a bunch of us were out supporting that cause and their family. And they'll be back as a sponsor as we do more events later in the year.
Terrific. And how you were going to ask me a question, weren't you, Richard?
No, I'm not. Just kidding. People already know that if they go to our website,
Tell them. Well, you could find all of our sponsors if you get to go over to iymoney.com, put your cursor over the sponsor tab. You'll get a nice drop-down menu, and that will take you to all the personal information, contact information for all of our sponsors. And they've all worked with Richard on a personal and professional basis for many years with
some of them back into the late 80s.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
With great success, of course, all the time.
time, right?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Now, let's get back to our esteemed guest, who's a master furniture craftsman. I guess that's a guy. I like to say that.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Works for
and,
me.
And also the driving force. If you've been over to North Park, you know, it's just been... the renaissance there has been pretty enormous and significant. And this gentleman in the studio with us tonight, Patrick Edwards, was I'd have to say the driving force behind that. Would you agree with me, Patrick?
Well, this year Forbes declared North Park the 13th hippest neighborhood in the country.
Yeah, I think
so.
I
there's 12 hipper neighborhoods. That's interesting.
Yeah. We're the hippest in Southern California.
I was going to say we must be the hippest
in
at least.
Southern California, yeah, okay. But not in the nation. We're not 13th in the nation.
Do you remember who was hippest in the nation?
No,
was,
I don't care if it's
I
North Park.
Okay. I just
North
wanted
Park.
To check them out.
I don't care. I don't
see what
care.
Kind of hip attributes they have that North Park doesn't have.
Go to Forbes
yet.
And ask them.
I'll
it's
ask
like
them.
Tommy Smothers, Jimmy Crackhorn, and I don't care. Remember that? But anyway, so Patrick, well, obviously that doesn't happen overnight. This has been a 30-year odyssey.
40.
Okay.
But before you talk about that, can you talk about what North Park used to be? I mean, even well before you got there?
Yeah, let's start at the beginning.
Well, North Park took a big hit in the 60s, and it's called Mission Valley. And it's exactly like if you were in Indiana and the freeway was built 3 miles outside of town, nobody drives down Main Street anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened in North Park in 66, 67. They took down the sign, everybody left, and they all moved to Mission Valley, and it became empty.
But before that, it was like the largest shopping district outside of downtown.
100 years ago, North Park was the first place outside of downtown that you could go to, which would be a shopping area. 30th University is historically one of the first shopping centers in San Diego.
It's probably a trolley service, right?
There was a trolley, and it's kind of ironic that it was superseded by a more modern concept of a shopping mall, the Mission Valley complex.
But I remember Mission Valley in the 60s, the stadium was built, the freeways went in.
Sure.
So it became, people moved out of the city into the suburbs.
Right.
All of that was happening.
And the malls grew up. But so then North Park lost a lot of commerce, right?
We lost it. We lost our jewelers. We lost our clothing stores. We lost everything. Shoe stores all disappeared. It was filled in with thrift stores. Our number one retail establishment was a thrift store.
And there were blood banks and all kinds of interesting
things. The probation
things.
Department.
Right.
It was...
tattoo parlors, all that?
No, nobody had tattoos back in the 60s.
That wasn't cool,
John. Actually, they have them now, actually.
Well, now they do, but that was a different climate.
Right. Tell us, then you got busy in civic activity and a vision to help rebuild North Park. When did that really start?
But you got to North Park again when? Tell us again when. Please.
If you look at the decay of the cities in America, you find that as the urban areas decay, they create blight. And what moves into that blighted area after the thrift stores are antique shops. It's kind of a gentrification of thrift stores to create antique shops. So it was natural for me in the 60s to gravitate towards a blighted area and create an antique shop. I opened up in 1969.
Okay.
And in 1979, state legislation was created in California, which allowed for assessment districts. And I found out about that, and I thought that was a great idea to coordinate an assessment district. So I started walking the streets of North Park, convincing the merchants who were still there that we had a chance if we banded together and self-assessed. And in 1984, we successfully balloted and were given the opportunity to create the North Park Business Improvement Assessment District. And at that time, throughout the city, other districts were doing similar activities in Hillcrest and in La Jolla and Little Italy. Previous to that, the Downtown Partnership was one of the older assessment districts, but eventually 17 different districts appeared in San Diego, which currently... are coordinated through the Business Improvement District Council. North Park, I became the president and served on the board for the past 30 years. I just retired this year. We also became a Main Street overlay zone, which Encinitas is a Main Street, Coronado is a Main Street, but North Park is the only Main Street business district in the city of San Diego.
What's the distinction?
That's important because the Main Street is a national organization overlay which serves the same purpose as I mentioned before. If you're in Indiana and the freeway misses your downtown, Main Street was an organization that was created to give structure through committees and through applications of effort of the volunteers to restore the vitality of the historic Main Street.
Huh.
Gotcha. In response to this absence of retail.
And you said there were three, this happened in three 10-year segments.
In 84, we created the business district, but until 94, nothing really happened. I just kept trying.
Mm-hmm.
But in 94, 95, we saw a change. That's when we became a Main Street, and we hired a director, Jay Turner, and he came down from Northern California, and had experience in the Main Street organization. So he brought that experience to North Park, and with the assessment district, that really put us into a different level.
Mm.
Then by about 2005, we had reached some kind of a breaking point where we had brought in restaurants and brought in drinking establishments and microbreweries and planted trees and built sidewalks and created a name for ourselves.
And who came up with this plan? Was it mostly internal, or did you?
It was me and the organization.
Huh. So the ultimate goal was to beautification projects, right? And then I think you mentioned that you went out and identified businesses that you wanted to personally attract to North Park and pursued them, right?
The biggest advantage of an assessment district is you can hire a staff person, a director, have an office to answer the phone, and work directly between the real estate developers and the merchants who might want to be in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you can identify a vacancy and say, we need a jeweler, we need a chocolate shop, we need a clother, we need somebody in the drinking establishment. And you go find that person and put them in that opportunity and bring them into North Park.
So you just didn't sit back and wait for it to happen. You guys went out. I think you said when the ballpark went in downtown, there was a lot of displaced businesses.
We actually did that during the downtown Petco Park. We brought up Cafe Calabria. We brought up several businesses from down there which were displaced by the development and made them aware that North Park had opportunities. We did demographic analysis. We hired people to find out who had the money in North Park. And luckily, with the five-mile radius from 30th University, you have an amazing amount of potential for developers to understand the money, the education. It's all there.
Obviously. Anyway, we have to take another our last break there, Patrick. Says, hang on. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life, and we'll be in the home stretch after this. Hang on. We're back in the home stretch with Patrick Edwards, the proprietor of Antique Refinishers. Is that it? In North Park on Utah. Boy, get over to his blog spot, wpatrickedwards.blogspot.com, excuse me, and you'll see a beautiful piece of cabinetry.
Jewel box.
That's a jewel box? Wow. Sold for $75,000.
So easy now.
Yeah. Careful, Joe. The IRS sometimes listens to our show.
I told you it was a cash business.
Anyway, it's gorgeous, and if you're into this, folks, you ought to really look it up and look Patrick up. But let's get into the home stretch here and discuss the redevelopment of North Park, which you said was a big deal during the break. So tell us how that all went.
Well, at the same time I was serving on the board of the North Park Main Street Business Association, I was elected as a business property owner to the Redevelopment Project Area Committee in North Park,
mm-hmm.
and I served over 10 years in that capacity. And so we had the ability to bond and use tax increment spending to entice developers and supplant subsidized development. So La Boheme, the apartment condos, we put in a 20% low mod housing component with that money's. We restored the North Park Theater, which is historic, with that money.
Mm-hmm.
We built a 400-car parking structure with that money. And we did many, many other activities in North Park that are bricks and mortar that I feel very proud about. And it was a group effort.
Mm-hmm.
And the North Park Project Area Committee was as successful as the downtown CCDC during our period.
Hmm.
We came very close to achieving every one of our goals until Jerry Brown stopped the process and left us with a few undone projects. But what happened was, if you look at North Park Energy, Economic Energy, By building the parking structure on 30th Street and restoring the theater, we changed the energy from an east-west University Avenue kind of development to a north-south 30th Street development, which works not only from Upas and South Park all the way down in the south up to and through El Cajon and Adams Avenue and brought mid-city together.
Yes, absolutely. Even up at 30th and Adams Avenue is really
you can
getting.
See the new development in the last 10 years throughout that entire stretch.
Yes, I think that whole 30th is going to be really pick up over time, and you're going to see a lot of these little niche businesses and these great little restaurants and eateries. And
well, it already has, Joe. The restaurants on 30th are amazing. I mean, favorite is Alexander's on 30th, but there's 7, 8.
But from Upas to Adams, I think it's just going to get better and better.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So there you have it. Tell us about your particular effort, because I know you had a rough time convincing people early on and going door to door and dealing with some difficulty. Tell us about the struggles and how you overcame a lot of that.
Well, if you are a business person in a business community, take the chance and the risk and walk door to door and go into every single business in your community and meet the people. And hardly anybody does that. And I found out that most of the business people are worried about customers. And so if you walk in and say, hey, how's your business? How can we work together? How can we improve the community? Most of the time, they're either apathetic or they just are hostile and say, if you're not going to buy something, go home. And it took a lot of that convincing to make them realize that there was a purpose for the assessment district, and their monies could be better spent for promotion, for activities, you know, the Taste of North Park, the festival, the parade. All of those things happen because of the assessment district.
The half marathon, by the way, now runs through North Park.
Absolutely.
A lot of events. Now, that Ray at Night, that's a big success.
Ray at Night became a big success.
Right. That's once a month. What night is that?
Saturday, I believe.
Second Saturday.
It's hard to keep up with all the things.
Yeah, all the art galleries, and now you're having a lot of outdoor festivals. And I guess the World Cup, you had a big thing there for the World Cup.
That was spectacular. We closed the streets. And, of course, we have a farmer's market. And it's not just North Park. You have to understand, I was 4 years president of the bid council for the city, and this is something I realized is going on in every single community that is represented by an assessment district. That's what makes San Diego great, is Little Italy and La Jolla and downtown and Gaslamp and East Village and City Heights and Adams Avenue and El Cajon and North Park, and all of those areas have their identity and their community.
Mission Hills, Hillcrest also.
Mission Hills also. I hate to leave them out, but 17, San Ysidro.
Yeah.
Those are all business districts that are part of the big council. And as president, I was trying to bring that North Park magic to every one of those communities.
Wow. Well, that's great. Now, you also became an expert in the legislation and getting to know a lot of the politicians. I mean, not a lot of business owners want to spend that time, but yeah, right? I mean, you had to learn where the landmines are and who's going to help you and who's not, et cetera, right?
I work 7 days a week and 365 days a year. I don't have golf. I don't have a boat. I don't have a sport. So my sport was to put on a suit and tie and go to a board meeting and work the agenda to my advantage. That was my sport, and I think that's kind of sick.
Well, No, that's dedication, and that's the kind of vision and leadership you need in your community, your business community, I think, Richard, if you're going to obviously make a major improvement. And he's living proof, and North Park is living proof, but like I mentioned before, these things don't happen by accident.
It's really important for business owners to know their assembly people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know who their congressperson is, et cetera, and actually develop relationships.
Patrick, is there anybody in the past or present in office that you'd like to say thank you to? Or?
Well, I going back to Gloria McCall in District 3, I've worked successfully with every single council person, Tony Atkins, Chris Keough, obviously Todd, Gloria, and all of these were dedicated council members for District 3. I've had a successful relationship with all of them, and I felt it my duty to represent in the council the needs of our community, both as a person who lives there and as a business property owner and as an active member of these different community organizations. And I speak across all those platforms for the benefit of the collective vision I have for North Park.
Mm-hmm.
So, Patrick, what do you think North Park will look like 10 years from now, 20 years from now?
Well, it's not just that. I predict that City Heights is going to be the next North Park.
Yeah, I agree.
And as a developer, if I were in that business, I would look at property on the transit corridors in City Heights and say, let's get involved there, because Hillcrest is built, downtown is built, Little Italy is built, North Park is built, City Heights is ready.
Yeah.
And the next 10 years, you're going to see some amazing things happen in
City Heights. Well, the late, great Saul Price was a big believer in City Heights.
Well, and he's a leader in the community, but that's exactly what's going to
happen. He passed on, but he was a great visionary, and I think he invested $150 million. Did you hear that figure, Richard? Or?
It's a big number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get in touch with Brian Monahan. He probably would know more.
But pay attention to mixed-use development on transit corridors at nodes. That's where it's happening.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking El Cajon Boulevard out that way?
Like I said, transit corridor nodes, mixed-use opportunities.
Huh.
That's where I would put my money if I had any.
So we're going to, down the road, we'll have a real estate developer get in here. Maybe we should have a couple of them in here, huh, Richard? And we'll hash this out what the next big vision is for San Diego. But obviously down by 30th and Upas, that structure there, as there's a brewery underneath that building, that's mixed use, isn't it?
It's a great example. Siegel is doing development there, and it's a new face for North Park. It's not the typical craftsman historic structure or the Spanish colonial.
Yeah.
It's something modern, and that's kind of the way the architecture is going.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's other opportunities out there now. I'm in touch with some people up at UCLA, and they think Westwood needs what you did in North Park. So we might be making a few trips up there before the year is out.
I was just up there. I agree.
You agree? Yeah.
They asked me to speak in Encinitas before they did their big development, and I think I convinced them to become a main street, and Encinitas is a perfect example of how you can transform.
Yeah, I live in Leucadia. I mean, they've done in Encinitas, and to some degree in Leucadia is really amazing.
They've done a great job up there in Encinitas. I don't think there's any vacant property, commercial property.
That's exactly what can happen.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So does the county get involved at all, or is that not their jurisdiction?
If you have a PBID, if you have a property-based district, then the county collects that monies on the property taxes and returns it back through the city to PBID.
Mm-hmm.
PBIDs are different than Mads.
Yeah. Anyway, Patrick, we have to sign off now, but thank you so much for being our guest. And folks, get over to meet Patrick at his store in Utah Street in North Park. It's a real pleasure and honor to have
you
with us.
Just get over to North Park.
Absolutely.
And for goodness sakes, it's gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Richard, thank you very much.
Yes. Anyway, Richard, good seeing you tonight. And I'd like to thank Eric Rubalcava, our sound tech, too, for making us sound good. And I'd like to thank Craig Blanke, our con executive, and our programming genius here, Dave Sniff. We always love working for him. And get over to iymoney.com. You can hear this podcast and all our podcasts. You can hear Dickie Smothers last week. You can hear Patrick Edwards this week. And they're all there. So have a good night, everybody. We'll see you next week, and you have a great week. Good night now.